Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda, but this week, you know what's going on. There's a little tournament we were talking about offline. It's called the U.S. Open, so we need to bring reinforcements. And our colleague on the eDraft, very good friend, and special co-host here, Kieran Clark, is with us this week. Kieran, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Carlos, and I'm very well and very excited about the U.S. Open, a real fascinating venue in Chambers Bay, a new venue, one that's we've had mixed reactions from absolutely positive reviews to guys that completely hate it. Undeniably, it could be brilliant or a complete disaster, but in the end, it's going to certainly be interesting, so I'm really looking forward to that.
We're looking forward to that. And Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I am fantastic, Carlos. Enby Park and Bernhard Langer won majors last weekend. Lydia Ko missed her first cut on the LPGA Tour. It's U.S. Open week, so that means we bring in the big kahuna, Kieran Clark, all the way from Bonnie, Scotland, to help preview the tournament and get his take on all things golf. Guys, I could talk about the U.S. Open all night long. I'm excited. Let's go.
So with that in mind, remember that I have the control so I can start muting things. So don't worry about it. We're going to control Fred, Kieran.
I am under threat of mute this evening, sports fans. So
fans, don't worry. We'll take care of it. But anyway, let's start right away with the weekend backspin. And let's start on the – we have two majors. The first one was on the LPGA Tour where Enby Park venturing a dominating win with a birdie in the final hole there on Sunday to wrap up her third straight victory at the Women's PGA Championship. She closed with a 5-under-68 and was bogey-free over the final 56 holes, ending up at 19-under there at Westchester Country Club. The victory was her 15th on the LPGA Tour, and this was her 6th major championship. Her 19-under total matched the lowest score in relation to par in championship history. Kristy Kerr in 2010 and Jannie Tseng in 2011 were the first to post 19-under. She also joined Annika Sorenstam as the only players to win this crown 3 straight years. And with the win, she regained the top spot in the world rankings on Monday, marked the third time she has reached number one and has held the top spot for a total of 73 weeks. Se-young came close within one after 8 holes, but the 3-putt bogey on the 9th and never got closer the rest of the way. She posted a 2-under and ended alone in second place at minus 14. Lexi Thompson did a good rally at 7-under and took third place at 12-under. A&A Inspiration winner Brittany Lincecum was one stroke back and at minus 11. Brooke Henderson and 2011 runner-up Morgan Pressel share fifth place at 10-under, while former champions Kerry Webb and Susan Pedersen both close with 72s to share seventh place. And like Fred mentioned, shooting one of the worst rounds of her professional career, a 3-over par 76. Wow, Tiger Woods would love to have one of his worst rounds at 3-over 76. But Lydia Ko missed her first cut on the LPGA Tour after qualifying for the weekend 53 consecutive times, either as an amateur or as a pro. It's the first time she has ever missed a cut. And on the Champions Tour, Bernhard Langer, he coasted there to finish with a 3-under to win, successfully defending his title by 6 shots at the Senior Players Championship. He finished at 19-under to go wire to wire, the 24th win for him on the Champions Tour, his 6th major title on the senior circuit. It was his first win since he won last season at the Dick's Sporting Goods. Last year he won 5 times. Kirk Triplett was the closest to finishing second to Langer. He finished at 7-under. Senior PGA Championship winner Colin Montgomery carried a 3-under and finishing tied for third place. And on the PGA Tour, Fabian Gomez, he won by 4 the St. Jude Classic. Fabian Gomez, yes, listen to him. Fabian Gomez, yes. Greg Owen took second, and hey, Phil Mickelson. He finished into a chair of third place. Look out, Phil Mickelson. He's coming. He's coming. And finally, on the European Tour, Chris Wood won there. The Englishman rallied to win by two strokes the Lioness Open. And I'm going to give Kieran the first shot at the weekend match.
What's a European Tour? What's that?
That's a little tour there.
Carlos, I think it's time to mute Fred.
Yeah, let's put the mute here.
He's only lasted 2 minutes. So I think it's time to actually mute him now. But, yeah, I'll quickly run through all those events. They're obviously a very action-packed weekend across the world. But starting with the LPGA and the Women's PGA Championship, the first one under the umbrella of the PGA of America. And MB Park, you know, she's, I think, quite an underrated player in the minds of the average sports fan. She's a very unassuming character. We don't really hear much about her, but you know, and despite that, she's now a six-time major champion. She's surpassed her great compatriot, Seri Pak, who only had five majors, and MB Park's now the most successful player from South Korea, which is a tremendous achievement at just the age of 26. And to win a hat-trick of those titles, she's just so consistent the way she plays, hits fairways and greens, and she's, you know, possibly the best putter in the game on her day. She holds so many putts, so consistent on the greens. And, you know, in the final three rounds she played there at Westchester, which is obviously a proper golf course, it's a real classic championship venue. And those last three rounds, she didn't make a single bogey. That is just an astonishing achievement from a real brilliant player who will now obviously look ahead to the majors to come in the next few weeks at the British Open and, of course, the Evian Championship. And on the Champions Tour, obviously, Bernard Langer won there. I was surprised to hear that it was his first victory this year, given how consistent he is on the Champions Tour, definitely perhaps the best player. He's kind of falling under the radar a little bit this year with Colin Montgomery taking most of the headlines. But Langer obviously came back to form there to win the senior players. And here's a thing for you about Langer. Because he won the Senior Open Championship last year at Royal Porthcawl, he's playing at the Open in St Andrews this year. And, you know, he's played well at the old course before. In 1984, he finished in the tie for second, and he played well in 2005. He may be 57 years old, but maybe, just maybe, Bernard could roll back the years and maybe contend for a little bit at the old course next month in July. And on the PGA Tour, obviously two unheralded players as such, in Fabian Gomez and Greg Owen going for the title there. But, you know, those are stories I love watching. Guys who have struggled for their careers, bouncing between the web.com to the PGA Tour, guys that are scrambling to make a living. And he's a 37-year-old, and Fabian Gomez shot a final round of 66 under that pressure, going for his first win. A tremendous, you know, real one under that pressure. And, you know, he's got security now of 2 years on the tour. He can pick his schedule now. It opens many doors. He's going to play in the Masters next year, which is a real dream for him throughout his career. So it's just tremendous to see. Obviously, Phil Mickelson, of course, now in form ahead of the U.S. Open. And over in the European Tour, we had Chris Wood, who, a guy who had missed 5 months over the winter due to injury, wrist injury had there. And he's come back, and he got that great victory there, overcoming a five-shot deficit of a final round of 67. And he's someone who you may remember, of course, as an amateur, contended and almost won the Open Championship in 2008 and in 2009 at Royal Birkdale and Turnberry, respectively. And somebody who's only 27 years old, you know, he's his second win on the tour. Hopefully now this is the start of him becoming a more consistent contender and a more consistent winner and fulfilling the potential as a player that he so clearly has. So certainly an action-packed week on all these different tours, and it sets us up for what should be a really intriguing one this week. So, Carlos, you can unmute Fred now and let him talk.
Okay, let's unmute Fred. There he is. It's unmuted. Fred, how about
you guys may never get back in after this. Hey, the new KPMG Women's PGA Championship was a hit on all fronts. NB Park moves back to number one after capturing her sixth major title. It was her third consecutive Women's PGA Championship win on three different golf courses and under two different names. Lydia Ko missed her first cut by a single shot on Friday and fell from number one, but got to hang out in New York for a couple of days, which she had a lot of fun doing. We'll talk about that later. Suzanne Pettersson, Lexi Thompson, and Morgan Pressel all had solid performances at Westchester. Oh, I got a couple things I got to mark down here, Carlos. We got to make note of this. Kieran said that Westchester was a proper golf course. You know, he might lose his Scottish citizenship because of that. So I know he stuck his neck way out for saying that. And I got to hand Kieran a really solid point there about Langer. playing at St. Andrews at the Open Championship. You know, that's a really good point. We need to keep an eye on that. But, hey, back to the LPGA Tour. 17-year-old Brooke Henderson is rapidly becoming the hot story of the LPGA season. She's not even a tour member yet. She earned $132,000 for her T5 finish at the Women's PGA and has now earned over $300,000, which would put her right at the number 20 spot on the money list. She only has a few more events she can play in the year and needs to end the season inside the top 40 to earn her card for next year without going to Q School. Did you guys watch her swing? It is nearly perfect. Golf Channel was keying on her while she was warming up one day. Loved watching her action. It is really, really good. Senior players, Champions Tour. Everybody knows the old Arnold Schwarzenegger line from the Terminator movies, "I'll be back." Well, Bernhard Langer is definitely back. He blew away the field and won by 6 shots at the senior players. Now moves to number 2 in the Charles Schwab Cup behind Kieran's good buddy, Colin Montgomery from Scotland. Memphis. Who in the world is Fabian Gomez, 36-year-old Argentine who has been up and down the Web.com Tour and the PGA Tour since 2011? This win at Memphis gives him a new 2-year exemption and will get him into the FedEx Cup playoffs, and as Kieran said, the Masters. Going to be a very good year for Mr. Gomez. And also, should mention that between rain delays, the Web.com Tour completed 72 holes at the Rust-Oleum Championship outside of Cleveland, Ohio, the center of the golf universe. 20-year tour professional and 45-year-old Shane Birch picked up a win for the old guys and should secure his ticket back to the PGA Tour for 2016. Back to you, Carlos.
And that wraps up our weekend backspin. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. Fred, we were talking just about right now about the LPGA and the new Women's PGA Championship, and I believe you have something to tell about being a home run this week. You just mentioned it, so we'll expand on it.
Yeah, exactly. Although this is a revamped or newly titled event on the LPGA Tour, it replaces the LPGA Championship. But the LPGA Tour Commissioner, Michael Wan, wanted all of the LPGA Championship records to remain intact, so they will be carried over to the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. NB Park is officially credited with 3 consecutive Women's PGA Championship victories, with this victory from this year. The PGA's Pete Bevacqua, KPMG's top executives, Michael Wan from the LPGA Tour, and NBC all combined to bring this great tournament to the ladies' game. Some of the majors on the women's tour just don't really seem like majors. The LPGA Championship was one of those. The Annie Inspiration, which were formerly the Kraft Nabisco, and the U.S. Women's Open, and the British Women's Open are definitely major class. Those three were always solid. But the old LPGA and then this new Evian just didn't quite measure up. This new Women's PGA Championship did. It was held on an iconic course at Westchester, and Kieran said it was a proper golf course, so that even elevates it more. And we'll visit Sahali next year in Seattle. With the women playing the 2014 U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst last year, Juan is putting a premium on visiting iconic golf courses in big markets for the LPGA Tour. In addition, 300 businesswomen attended the Women's Leadership Conference held adjacent to the Women's PGA, which stressed women's issues. Presentations by top women from around the country, Anna Sorenstam, Susie Whaley, and Condoleezza Rice, were just 3 of the 16 presenters at the conference. Annika Sorenstam said, It's big and it's bold. I think it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Puts this event on this venue so close to the Big Apple. I'm very proud to have a little part of it and certainly get inspired by the leaders who have spoken. The main focus was women and is sure to bring more women and their families to the game. Juan said in an interview that every tour player congratulated him and said how much they loved playing at Westchester, how much they loved the new tournament. And, you know, the PGA and KPMG and NBC all need to be applauded. The players liked it for one reason, probably for sure. The purse jumped from $2.75 million up to $3.5 million. That is a big deal. TV ratings were through the roof. Golf Channel viewership was up over 80% on both Thursday and Friday. We're talking first and second rounds here. We're not talking about the finish. They were the most watched Golf Channel early round coverages on record since 2009. NBC reported highest overnight ratings for any women's major the past 3 years for Saturday's third round, and big names like NB Park, Lexi Thompson, Suzanne Pedersen, and Morgan Pressel didn't hurt bringing people eyeballs to the TV screens. You're getting more women interested in golf. You got a bigger purse for the LPGA Tour. Way more TV exposure for women and the elevation of a weak major to a serious major. What's not to like, guys?
So, Kieran, how about the Scottish Open? What do you have for us?
Yeah, as Fred said there, the women's PGA is growing in stature, and one event also in the men's game that's certainly growing in stature all the time is the Scottish Open. And it's become one of the marquee events on the golfing calendar, I would say. Contested the week prior to the Open Championship, the event has attracted some of the biggest names in recent years as they have sought to hone their game on a links course in a competitive environment ahead of the game's oldest major. Rory McIlroy, Justin Rose, Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler will all be in this year's field at the wonderful Gullen Golf Club before the 144th Open Championship at the Old Course of St Andrews. However, in the past week, attention has been on the future of the Scottish Open and where it will be played in the coming years. And last week, Donald Trump, connoisseur of dreadful hairstyles, and quite possibly the next president of the United States, has claimed that the event would be coming to his Trump International links north of Aberdeen in 2017. In fact, the 69-year-old who has a strong aversion to wind turbines even went as far to claim that the Scottish Open would be contested at his course on a permanent basis. Well, we'll see about that. The Scottish Open will certainly be making a return to former venue Castle Stewart next year, with the subsequent years yet to be officially announced. It does seem likely, however, that the event will make a visit to the west of Scotland at some point, with the Ayrshire links of Dundonald being long touted as a potential venue. The Scottish Open has travelled all across the country, in the north of Scotland at Castle Stewart, north-east at Royal Aberdeen, and now in the mid-east at Gullen. So the west has been kind of left out of it here. Given the sheer scale and quality of Trump's links near Aberdeen, it is expected to become a venue in the near future. But Mr. Trump's claims of it being a permanent home do seem to be a little bit misguided, with the tournament director, Peter Adams, only confirming that Trump International was just one of a number of clubs and courses that organisers had been in discussion with. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But obviously, Mr. Trump's got a lot on his plate right now, running for president, fighting wind turbines, and maybe trying to get a European Tour event at his golf course. We'll wonder which is the most important thing for him. Who knows what priorities. But Mr. Adams is also commenting on the potential of a certain Mr. Tiger Woods being part of the field next year. Obviously, we have McIlroy and Mickelson and all these big names playing, but Tiger is the one that's remained elusive. And apparently, having held discussions at the recent European Tour dinner at Wentworth with Tiger's agent Mark Steinberg, or Steiny, as Tiger likes to call him. Of course, Tiger doesn't actually use people's proper names when he refers to them. He also gives them really strange, stupid nicknames, like Steiny or Marco, in terms of Marco Mira. Obviously, Fred, if Tiger was talking about you, you'd be Freddie, and Carlos would be Carly, and I'd be Kearney or something like that. It's Tiger. But
anyway, I can think of other names for you, Kieran.
Sure you do. But on the Scottish Open, Director Adams believes that there's a chance of attracting Woods to play in the event in the future. And he's right, there is a chance, and it's no chance. Because
it's
Tiger,
very slim.
As we all know, Tiger doesn't play the week prior to a major in a competitive event. He prefers to go and prepare quietly away from the attention. So, Carlos and Fred, I really don't think Tiger's going to play in the Scottish Open, but Mr. Trump, he might just get one in the near future, one of his courses.
Well, Kieran, I don't know. Remember, he just started a campaign, so now he's into politics, so don't trust everything he says.
Well, to be fair, Carlos, I didn't trust anything that he said before he went into politics. Now that he's in politics, you know, how can we trust him at all?
Just saying. Okay. Hey, let's talk about Rory McIlroy a little bit. And let's say, you know, Alan Tovey, he's the industry editor for The Telegraph in the UK, and he wrote that Rory McIlroy's victory at the Open Championship in Hoylake last summer helped drive up annual revenues and profits at a company that stages golf's premier events. R&A Championships turnover in 2014 rose by 6% to £60.7 million as the prospect of the golfing prodigy triumph drew vast crowds to the event at Royal Liverpool Golf Club. More than 203,000 fans attended the event during practice rounds and the 4 days of play when McIlroy's 17-under par saw him win by 2 shots. The attendance was 60,000 higher than the previous year event at Murfield, Scotland. R&A Championships, which is held by R&A Trust Co., itself owned by the Royal Nation Golf Club of St. Andrews, said annual pre-tax profits rose 186% in accounts filed at company's house. Its performance was boosted by higher income from media rights, ticket sales, and sponsorship, and retail income at the Open. However, R&A Championships said that staging the event at Hoylake had, as it expected, incurred additional expenditure to upgrade the Open Championship and further enhance the spectator experience. Among these things included, for the first time, building a huge horseshoe grandstand, almost enclosing the 18th green to create a stadium atmosphere, giant LED screens around the course showing the action, and a Wi-Fi system. Yes, we need a Wi-Fi system, through which fans could download an app and stream live TV coverage. Why would I want to do that? I want to see it there. Anyway, the R&A Championships, which also stages other golf tournaments, including the British Senior Open, Amateur Champions, and international matches, did warn not to expect such a stellar performance for this year when the event is staged at the home of golf, the Old Course in St. Andrews. Fred, so apparently Rory McIlroy is good for business, but it depends on where he's going to play.
Yeah, he is good for business. He's not quite as good as what Tiger was yet, but a lot of people like to watch him play. Hey, guys, to me, the second biggest story of this U.S. Open behind the Chambers Bay course itself is the broadcast crew from Fox Sports. Golf fans have become very accustomed to NBC's coverage of USGA events over the past several years. Dan Hicks presided over a talented group of announcers, Gary Koch, Roger Maltby, and tempered Johnny Miller's criticisms with diplomatic flair. With Fox's 10-year deal for all USGA tournaments, enter Joe Buck, who does Major League Baseball World Series, NFL Super Bowls, and other big sports coverage for Fox. He, along with Greg Norman, will man the anchor desk for the television broadcast. Buck is the consummate professional and will try to keep the coverage on track. The Shark, of course, is never short of opinions and will share them with anyone who will listen. He will be controversial, but will he be relevant? Norman is indeed a very smart guy. My question, is he that vain to want the added TV exposure for his ego, or is it his way of expanding his brand for his business empire? From what we're told, he's worth over $300 million, which is very nice, but chump change to someone who is a competition junkie and wants to compete with the biggest boys in the financial world. Even Michael Jordan is now worth over $1 billion. Holly Saunders bolted from Golf Channel to the big network at Fox to broaden her market base and give her more TV time. She is certainly experienced and knows her way around an interview with a tour player from a journalistic point of view and is much more than another pretty face. The rest of the crew is untested and new to the task. They have been tirelessly working to coordinate roles and features to fill the airtime, but can they meet the level that CBS and NBC have brought to television screens over the years? Brad Faxon, Julie Inkster, Corey Pave, and Steve Flesh all have great experience as players. Can they convey their knowledge to the listeners is the question. Flesh and Faxon have had limited experience on the Golf Channel, but the rest of the team is sparse live camera time. This U.S. Open at Chambers Bay is sizing up to be one of the best ever, with a controversial golf course, the dearth of young talent, and a few veterans wanting badly to get one last shot at that U.S. Open trophy. I have to admit, I watched and listened intently to Fox's coverage of the two-man best ball from Bandon Dunes last month, and I came away somewhat less than impressed. The coverage seemed amateurish and bordered on absurd. The guy they flew in from Scotland or wherever he came from should have stayed home. I know Kieran would have done a much better job if they needed a Scottish brogue to the broadcast. I certainly hope bringing in the big guns, Joe Buck and Greg Norman, will drastically improve for Chambers Bay. Kieran, you got some more news about the most interesting guy in golf, Miguel Angel, is that correct?
I certainly do, Fred. Let's quickly say there about NBC, who have obviously lost the U.S. Open rights this year. They, of course, picked up the rights for the Open Championship and the R&A's Championship in the coming year. So you'll hear Johnny Miller and Dan Hicks announcing from Royal Birkdale, I think, in a couple of years. So it's not all doom and gloom for NBC and your old Johnny. But yes.
Hey, Kieran, before you get started, I hear a lot of bemoaning the fact that BBC lost the rights and Sky Sports picked it up. Is that correct? The golf fans would rather have BBC. Is that right?
Well, the difference is the BBC is a network channel, so everyone in the country can watch it, while Sky is a subscription channel, so it's limited to people who are subscribers. But certainly Sky, they have coverage of every single event in the game, European Tour, PGA Tour, all the majors, Ryder Cup. BBC's output now is very low, so Sky do a better job of covering golf, but obviously less people can watch it, so that's a concern for the R&A going forward.
See.
But on to Miguel Angel Jimenez, Fred, who of course is your great hero, the man who you idolize every morning when you get up.
I do.
Yes,
absolutely.
I know you do. You wish that you were actually in his expensive shoes.
I absolutely do.
Smoking his cigars.
drinking the wine and driving the Ferraris.
Driving the Ferrari and even growing a ponytail. I know you do.
And he hangs out with some pretty good-looking women from what I see, too.
Well, I knew. There you go. There's no reason for that. You definitely want to. Hope your wife's not listening to this show, Fred. We'll move on to that swiftly. But yes, Miguel was recently interviewed by Ewan Murray in the Guardian newspaper over here, and they discussed a wide range of topics. And of course, the most notable would be his desire to one day become the Ryder Cup captain for Europe. And he missed out, of course, to Darren Clarke earlier this year for the 2016 captaincy at Hazeltine. And Jimenez rightly feels that he should be a strong contender for the role in 2018 when the event is contested in continental Europe for the first time since 1997 at Valderrama. And on missing out to Darren Clarke earlier this year, Jimenez expressed disappointment, but did add, and this is a quote, he said, "It was fine. I have a lot of respect for the decision made. It's not as if we were fighting against anyone there. I said to Darren, you have all my support for everything you do. You will do at the Ryder Cup. I told Darren if there was anything at all he needed, I am here." And looking ahead to the 2018 Ryder Cup in France at the Golf National, which is a tremendous golf course where they host the Open de France every year. We'll see it in a couple of weeks. There have only been three captains in the past from continental Europe, Seve Ballesteros, Bernard Langer, and Jose Maria Olafabo. So they are certainly due another, and it's kind of a behind the scenes, it's a bit of a muttering amongst the continental players in Europe who feel they aren't getting a fair deal out of the captaincies. So along with someone like Thomas Bjorn, for example, from Denmark, Jimenez is an obvious candidate to become the fourth of those continental captains. He certainly wants it, of course, and he said in an interview to Ewan Murray, "It is important that the captain has a good connection with the players. It doesn't matter where you are from, British, Irish, continental Europe. What is the difference? We are European people, and you need to connect with others." And as we all know, Jimenez certainly connects with people. And of course, at Glen Eagles last year, when he was an assistant captain to Paul McGinley, Spaniards seemed to spend most of his time taking selfies of himself in the first tee with all the fans that were in attendance. And, that sort of behavior has to be said, led to critics to question whether he has the right attitude and mentality to actually be the captain. but there is, when you look at his competitive record, there's no doubting his talent as a player and his competitive edge as an individual. He's a real serious golfer when he gets onto the course. And competitive, of course, these days, both on the European Tour and now on the Champions Tour, the 51-year-old is still within the world's top 50, with recent second-place finishes in Spain and Wentworth, illustrating his continued ability to compete with the young guys. He places a lot of that down to the modern equipment, which has allowed him to hit the ball a sufficient distance to this day, although there's clearly more to it than that within him. He's a real feisty competitor.
It's the workout, Kieran. It's the workout.
Yeah, so, well, that's it. It's all the wine he drinks. That's what it is. It keeps him young. That's what it is. And on the balancing on the two tours, you know, he wanted to say to you and Murray, it's difficult to combine both tours, the European and the Champions Tour, because it means a lot of travel mainly, and the golf course is going to be very different in America to Europe. But when it comes, age comes 50, it's probably come too early for me, but I don't want to let the European Tour down because I feel like I am still competitive there, which he certainly is, and he feels that he can play, he wants to play with the seniors as well, because we'll see a lot of guys he hasn't seen for a while, and it's competitive and also quite good fun as well, but a bit more of a relaxed environment. So it may be tough to combine both, but hopefully we'll see him on the regular tour for a significant time to come. As we all know, he's always entertaining to watch, both as a personality and also as an excellent player, you know, a fantastic player. And Jimenez is certainly one of the brightest lights in the game, although Keegan Bradley may disagree with that. So, Carlos, I do hope that we see Miguel as the Ryder Cup captain in 2018. You know, no matter what happens there, you know, it would certainly be fun to watch.
It's always fun to watch Miguel Angel Jimenez wherever he is. And to finish the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network, I have the final six slots for the U.S. Open were filled. Kevin Kisner and Andy Sullivan earned the spots in this week's U.S. Open Championship via the world rankings, while four alternates from sectional qualifying rounded out the field. Kisner enters the week ranked 55th in the world, thanks in part to four top 10 finishes in his last six starts. If you're looking for somebody with good form going into the U.S. Open, he is one of them. He lost in a pair of playoffs in the last 7 weeks. He lost to Jim Furyk at the Heritage and fell to Ricky Fowler in an extra session at the Players' Championship. This will be Kisner's second major championship start. He missed the cut at Pinehurst last year. Sullivan, who's the world's number 58, won twice earlier this season on the European Tour, with both wins coming in South Africa. He has three straight top 20 finishes at events in England, Northern Ireland, and Ohio. The Englishman will be competing in his first major championship. The USGA has held six spots for players that possibly could have moved into the top 60 in the world rankings. And with Kisner and Sullivan the only ones earning the spots in the field via the world rankings, four alternates, Kevin Chappell, Jimmy Gunn, Steve Marino, and Josh Persons, were added to the field at Chambers Bay. Chappell lost in a 5-4-3 playoff at the Columbus, Ohio qualifier, then bested Alex Cheka for the top alternate spot from that qualifier. This will be Chappell's seventh major. He tied for third at the 2011 U.S. Open at Congressional. Persons lost to Tim O'Neill in a playoff at the Rockville, Maryland qualifier. He will play for his first major championship this week. Marino and Gunn both narrowly missed out on qualifying, then won both playoffs to earn the top alternate spots at their respective qualifiers. Marino bettered Rod Pampling and Peter Malnati. Marino will make his 14th championship start. His best finish was a tie for 14th at the 2010 Masters. And Gunn beat J.J. Henry in a playoff at the Memphis, Tennessee qualifier. Gunn will compete in his first major this week. That wraps up the Par 5 news presented to you by United Golf Network. And I believe, Fred, you have some words from our sponsor.
Yes, Carlos, United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network also provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to MyGolf in U.S., which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment online. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity cards.
And that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, you don't want to miss it. We have an VIG very important guest of the week. It's none other than Lydia Ko, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. She's Lydia Ko. She's an 18-year-old born in Seoul in South Korea, but when she was 6, her parents decided to emigrate to New Zealand just 1 year after they made a holiday trip to Sydney in Australia, which was the one that ignited Lydia's interest in golf. Fast forward to January 29 of 2012, and she became the youngest person ever to win a professional golf tournament by winning the Bing Lee Samsung's Women's NSW Open on the Australia LPG Tour. She was 14 at the time. Ryo Ishikawa had been the youngest at 15 years old. Then on August 26, 2012, at the age of 15 and 4 months, she became the youngest winner ever of an LPGA Tour event. Lexi Thompson had the record at 16 years old and 2 months. And on February 2 of this year, Lydia Ko became the number one ranked women professional golfer after a runner-up finish at the Coast Golf Championship and became the youngest player of either gender to be ranked number one in the professional golf. Her career is just starting to soar. The sky's the limit, Fred, and we have her on the VIG. Tell us about this interview.
Yeah, Carlos, you know, when you're interviewing someone, you're constantly thinking about the next question and how you want the interview to be structured, especially when they are talking, and you miss the nuances of their comments. When I listened back to the tape, I was just blown away by how mature 18-year-old Lydia Ko really is. And you got to have to understand, I was like her fifth interview of the day. She still had a segment to tape with a local TV station. She was mixing it up with the tournament staff, signing autographs, posing for pictures, and in addition had earlier interacted with top executives from Marathon Petroleum, Owens Corning, and Owens Illinois, the main sponsors of the Marathon Classic. That was all after she had already hosted a clinic for local junior golfers on the golf course and addressed the crowd gathered for the media day here at Highland Meadows. I have been in press conferences in the past years with Lydia, and you could tell she still acted like a young girl. Now she is very poised, confident, and intelligent young woman at the age of 18. She just completely blew me away, Carlos.
Let's play that interview.
We're talking with Lydia Ko here, stopped in Toledo today for media day for the Marathon Classic. She's a defending champion. Lydia, thanks so much for taking a minute to talk to us.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
Now, you just came off a week at Westchester. Actually, you missed a cut there. That was your first missed cut on tour. You've had such amazing streaks. The cuts made, the rounds under par, all these kind of things, but that doesn't seem to be a motivator for you. What are the goals that you set for yourself?
Yeah, to me, you know, I like to set my goals, you know, by week, so kind of weekly goals. One of my big goals is to stay in the moment and be happy and enjoy what I do. So that's always probably like my big goal for the season. But, you know, streaks and all that, they come after, you know, each tournament. And, you know, when you're playing, you're not really thinking about how many rounds under par you shot. You kind of think about the result and what's happened. But, no, I mean, I guess it was one day maybe bound to happen. And it's a little disappointing that it happened during a major week. But, you know, I had so much fun at Westchester and it was a great golf course.
When you turned pro, you came in as number four in the world when you on the Rolex ranking. You jumped up, held the number one ranking for several weeks. Envy just knocked you back out of that with your missed cut. Has that been a big motivator for you?
Yeah, you know, when I became world number one after Ocala, I wasn't sure how long I was going to, you know, be in that position. I said, hey, maybe it's going to be a one-week thing and it's going to be over. But no, I had it longer than I had ever imagined. And, you know, it was so cool to be there and, you know, to play the New Zealand Open in front of the home crowd, being the world number one player, that was really exciting for me. But, yeah, you know, it just, I guess, will make me work harder, you know, hopefully get my game back again soon, and then, you know, just try and race her to it.
Now, Westchester is a little bit of a tighter golf course. You would think that would have fit your game pretty well. Lancaster Country Club, U.S. Women's Open will be held there. Have you been to that course yet and looked at it?
Yeah, I went and played just a couple rounds at Lancaster.
What did you think of that golf course? Does it fit your game?
Yeah, you know, you miss the fairway, you've got thick rough. You know, the bunkers are positioned right in the position where an average length distance player would go right in it. But, no, I think it should be a lot of fun. You know, the greens are very undulating, so you kind of need to position yourself well.
Now, on a little lighter note, you missed the cut, but you got to spend a little time in New York City over the weekend. So, 18-year-old in New York, what did you do first there?
Yeah, you know, we went and saw the Broadway show Wicked, and that was a lot of fun. You know, I love Broadway shows and musicals. So it was I had fun, and you know, I obviously saw like The Wizard of Oz, those kind of movies, but to see kind of another aspect of it, I had lots of fun.
Very good. I understand that. I know you're also going to school. You're taking some college classes. How is that going for you?
Yeah, it's going good. You know, it's definitely tough to do, you know, the same thing. Well, two different things at the same time. But no, I've always been really interested in psychology, so it's really cool to learn more about it.
I know you've stated that you just don't see yourself. You started at such a young age and found so much success early. You don't see yourself hanging on and playing for 20 or 30 years. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I mean, my retirement announcement at 30, that really hasn't changed. It might change when I go closer to that age, but for now that's the age I set, and I have no plans on changing it for now.
Well, we certainly enjoyed you watching you play over the last several years, and I know we're going to enjoy it down the road. So thanks again so much for taking a minute to talk to us.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to start with Kieran now. Kieran, like Fred said, she definitely sounds very mature, very in charge, and she definitely knows what she wants and where she's headed for. So what's your impression on the interview and about Lydia Ko overall?
Yeah, I think you're right there about the maturity. But more than that, I think there was a bit of personality and a bit of warmth there when she's talking about her time in New York and seeing the Broadway shows and so on. You know, that's those little bits of information, you know, a lot of players don't give that to you, really. And given, as Fred says, you know, a very busy day, talking to a lot of different media types, and after, I think players can get into a pattern of just repeating themselves over and over and over again, and without really thinking about the question. But I think she clearly thought about the questions that Fred asked, and that makes a difference, and it gives her a good interview. And certainly she came across very well. I'll be looking forward to having her over in Scotland in the next few weeks when she comes over to play in the Women's Scottish Open at Dundonald and in Ayrshire, and then down at Turnberry for the Women's British Open. So it'll be fantastic to see her close up, and obviously an amazing talent, but certainly a very strong personality behind that, and a woman who's got a real, you know, she's obviously well-rounded, education, doing psychology and so on. So she's got a very clear sort of plan with her life and where she wants to go with it, and that's only a good thing.
Fred, overall, I think that Lydia seems focused. She knows, like you mentioned, like you asked her about the motivations to get back to number one? Is she aware of it? She wasn't at the beginning, she said, but she now is more aware of it, and it might be a driver for her in the future. And also, I have seen this commercial about, I don't know, it's insurance that this lady says, I'm going to retire in 15 years, so I'm giving you my 15-year notice on retirement. And the guy says, hey, you took me by surprise. And then I remember when Craig Ken interviewed him, and he said about that, that she's already thinking that far ahead. So really, it's not surprising that she has those goals already mapped out.
Yeah, she, you know what, I mean, we followed her, you know, all three of us have followed her for the last few years, her amazing rise to notice in the golf world with her wins as an amateur down in New Zealand and Australia, and then winning the Canadian Open on the LPGA Tour back-to-back as an amateur, and then announcing her professional status at the age of 16, and Michael Wan accepting her onto the LPGA Tour, starting off as number four ranked player in the world. I mean, that's just really heady stuff. And for to where she's at right now, I'm just been truly amazed. And you know, like I said, I've listened to her before. I've been at press conferences with her before. And where she's at right now, man, she is really in control of what's going on around her. She is, you know, she just doesn't get too up, too down. And, you know, with the state of the women's game, with Lydia, with Envy, with Stacy, with Suzanne, Lexi Thompson, on and on and on. Now you throw in Brooke Henderson, and you throw in Minji Lee, and you throw in Charlie Hall. And, you know, I mean, the women's game is just so full of interesting stories right now. It's really, really on a big upswing, and Lydia Ko is a big part of that.
It's a big part, and we definitely, it's fun to watch, and we can't wait to see what's next with her. Well, that wraps up our VIG, very important guest segment of the week. So we're going to take a short break, our final one, before we go into the big one, the preview on the practice range of the U.S. Open to be held at Chambers Bay. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
Carlos, are you there?
I am here. And I'm sorry. I was trying to mute Fred, and I muted myself. That's the problem.
But say, Carlos, that was quite that was a real pause for dramatic effect. We were all on the edge of our seat just waiting to see what was going to happen. It was.
See, that, you know, Karen, you asked me once that I haven't used that power before, and the problem is I use it for myself. That's the problem. Hey, we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic. This week we didn't have to pick it. It was picked on its own. It's the U.S. Open preview, and that's why we have Kieran with us. So let's start talking about the 115 U.S. Open Championship, which heads to the Great Northwest and the Great Unknown, the name Chambers Bay. It's an eight-year-old course that is hosting its second USGA Championship, but it's the first major. The course hosted the 2010 U.S. Amateur, where Peter Uihlein, the top-ranked amateur in the world at the time, beat David Chong. This looks said to be one of the most challenging U.S. Opens in the long history of the great event. Under the tenure of Executive Director Mike Davis, the USGA has been progressive in its approach to their flagship tournament, with a clear aim of challenging the world's top professionals to their limits. There may be those who have grumbled and will continue to grumble about the severity of the course at Chambers Bay, but it will present the same examination to all 156 players in the field, and by the close of the tournament, the track will identify the most resilient and imaginative golfer in the field. The Reverend Trent Jones Jr. layout can be stretched to beyond 7,900 yards, and although it's unlikely to be extended to its full length, the USGA has significant scope for altering the playing characteristics of certain holes during the course of the event by moving tees. Perhaps the most obvious example of this comes with the opening and closing holes. Both the first and the 18th can be played as either par 4s or par 5s. They're set to alternate both to keep the overall par at 70. The players will have to display a mixture of power, ball striking, scrambling, and strategy to successfully negotiate this 8-year-old links-style course. So basically, Fred, it should be a fine all-around test, and that's what you expect from the year's most demanding tournament, Fred. How about that, the U.S. Open and the preview on the course?
Yeah, you know, I was listening a little bit to live from Chambers Bay just before we went on the air today. And Tiger was saying that in the practice rounds, with the leeway that Mike Davis has, you know, the course can be set up so many different ways. On several of the holes, there are three or four different tee shots, different sight lines that you have to kind of practice or look at or be aware of, because the course has so much flexibility. As you mentioned, the course opened in 2007, just 8 years ago. Robert Trent Jones was the designer and the architect. It was built specifically to host a USGA championship event. It was built on the site of an old stone quarry. It's bordered on the west edge by Puget Sound. There's a railroad, a working railroad track that runs between the course, or right along a couple of the finishing holes, actually, and the sound. And on the other side of the course, there's about a 200-150-foot cliff, you know, just like you're at the above looking down into a quarry. So you can, from up there, you can see a lot of the course, and you look right above the ninth hole, actually, if you're standing right off the veranda of the clubhouse, which has about 50 different tees that they can use, from a lower level tee to a higher tee. And I mean, it's just, there are so many different things they can do with this golf course. It's absolutely amazing. The players are grumbling. You know, we've been talking about it for a couple weeks, players stopping in there, playing a little bit, and then talking about it. And the green complexes are extremely difficult. The conditions are hard and fast. With the severe undulations on the greens, three putts are going to be the norm. Iron shots into the greens will be very important, and they're going to take weird bounces. So, you know, players are just going to have to embrace the fact that unruly bounces and balls rolling 10 or 20 yards, maybe off the green, that's going to be commonplace. So, you know, the USGA not only wants to test the physical ability of the player, they also want to test the mental acuity. And this U.S. Open, maybe more so than the knee-deep rough and the ribbon-like fairways and the hard, fast greens at places like Baltusrol and Wingfoot and some of these places, it looks open. There's only one tree on the whole golf course, and it's not in play. It sits behind the 15th green. It's just, you know, the humps and bumps are everywhere, and a lot of sand. So it's going to test these guys. And David Duval was also making a really good point that, you know, the rounds are going to be slow. Guys, they're going to take time because there's going to be a lot of chipping going on. There's not going to be, and every putt's going to be, you're going to be grinding on because there's so much break in every putt. And he said, you know, by the time they get to the second wave, they're going to be looking at 5.5 and 6 hour rounds. So just being out there on the golf course that long takes a lot of mental discipline to stay involved and stay into the moment on each shot. So I think mental capacity is going to be one of the big factors in this whole thing, Carlos. And with that, I'll turn it over to you and Kieran. I'll stop right there, and I got some other points I can make later.
I was about to start muting, but no, don't worry.
No, but Kieran, I was afraid of that.
Hey, Kieran, you know, like Fred was saying, what do we know about this blaze? We know it's in Washington, which is a first in itself and has been built and molded on top of what was an old quarry site. While we've seen this coastal type golf at Pebble Beach before, we have never really witnessed anything like this. It's a bona fide Lynx track, never really seen in the States, but very common there in the UK. So I was reading about a guy called John Clark, agronomist called John Clarkin, who helped there, and he, like many others, has been drafted in a form from British and Irish background knowledge of Lynx tracks, and he helped develop it. And he stated how Lynx-like it is, and that you can draw pretty much no comparisons with any U.S. courses, but I've heard other players, and especially Phil Mickelson, that this reminds him a lot of St. Andrews. So what do you have to say about the course?
Yeah, the course is undoubtedly intriguing for that very reason, in that it's something we've never really seen before in a U.S. Open. Actually, it's somewhat ironic that Robert Trent Jones's father, Trent Jones Sr., he in many ways created what we know was the doctrine for U.S. Open golf courses. He redesigned Oakland Hills in 1951 for the U.S. Open. He essentially determined that the golf course should be very narrow, deep, rough, hard and fast greens. What we came to know for essentially half a century in the U.S. Open was is somewhat predictable, very, very laborious and a rather joyless experience for the players, where you missed the fairway, it was hack out. And it wasn't very interesting. So in the end, you were reducing the entire field to the same shot. They had to hit the fairway, hit the green, and that was it. It was more of a plodder's exhibition rather than an exhibition of skill. This is something very different. This golf course is wider open. Rather like Pinehurst last year, and the golf course is playing extremely firm and fast. It's been a very dry climate in the west coast of the U.S. for the last few months, and the course is, many people are saying, is playing as firm and fast at any major since Hoylake in 2006 at the Open Championship, and that was essentially like playing on a tarmac road. So the golf course is not going to play anywhere near to its yardage. It may be 7,500 yards in scorecard, but the ball's going to run for an absolute mile. So you've got to take into account all the players. Strategically, it's going to be very important here. Golf course is very undulating, so now the play, the bounce and the roll, balls can run for 50 or 100 yards quite easily. So you've got to take that into account, and certainly it's going to be a real mental test. And the players who have certainly have spent more time there, I say Phil Mickelson has spent a lot of time at Chambers Bay. He's one of the most positive players about the golf course. The guys who have spent a lot of time there have seen the different tees, the way it can play, all the bounces, even around the greens, how complex greens are at times, you know, very undulating. And of course, another thing the greens is as well is the fact that there's absolutely no definition between the fairway and the green. These little white dots and sprinkler heads are actually marking where the green begins. So there's no definition in the golf course really at all in that respect. So it's a golf course that will test every aspect of the games, of each player's game, and that's something we don't really see in the US Open. It is very Open Championship-like in that respect, and that's going to be intriguing. My one sort of caveat about the course is how it's going to be set up, not in terms of the tees and the idea of swapping the first and the ninth hole and the 18th hole, sorry, in terms of the par, that's somewhat irrelevant. In the end, it's going to be a par 70 anyway, and in the end, it doesn't really matter. The guy with the lowest score is still going to win. But more pertinently is where the USGA are going to put the pins, particularly if the golf course is playing as firm and fast as it is right now, and the weather forecast suggests it's going to continue to get firmer as there's no rain in the forecast, but saying that the wind isn't very high either, so it shouldn't dry out too much. So if the pins are in reasonably sensible places, then the golf course should reward some creativity and imagination and not just be a simple execution test of hit the fairway, hit the greens. It's going to be a case of running the ball on the ground into the greens, and that's going to test different parts of the game from players that we don't see normally. That's possibly why we've seen a lot of people complaining about it. And unfortunately these days, particularly on the PGA Tour, but increasingly on the European Tour, the golf courses every single week are set up in virtually the same way. And it's become very formulaic and very predictable. And consequently, when you take the players out of that comfort zone, they don't like it. We saw that at the Irish Open, where suddenly you throw Rory McIlroy, the game's best player by a mile, the guy who excels so brilliantly, on the kind of the standard American style golf course. He went to Royal County Down, a traditional links course, and really struggled because he is not used to those skills. And Graham McDowell, a guy who is from Northern Ireland and grew up at Royal Port Rush, he said after the Irish Open that he had actually forgotten how to play that style of golf because they're so used to playing what's in essence target golf, fairways, greens, very predictable. And this is something different, and it's going to reward a player who has, again, the mental capacity to accept the fact that sometimes the bounces are going to go for you and against you. In the end, gentlemen, you know, luck is part of golf. You can hit the ball into the rough and get a good lie, that's luck. You hit the ball in the fairway, you find a divot, that's bad luck. That, in the end, it all evens itself out in the end. So it'll be the case this week. So guys who have a strong mentality, manage their game very well, have a good strategy, obviously hit the ball straight, and have good short games and have excellent iron play. It's going to demand all these different skills. And but certainly, if you do not perform, if you're not quite on your game, this place will find you out very quickly. Hopefully, the USGA don't let it get too out of hand in terms of the dryness and the firmness. They keep washing the greens, keep washing the fairways at times, which I think they have done more than perhaps they did 5 years ago when the US Amateur was there. The golf course isn't as severe as it was 5 years ago, so it's going to be a really intriguing test. It's certainly it's a wild card in the US Open history, and it could either be brilliant or a complete disaster. I'm edging towards, I think it's going to be a real exciting championship, something that's completely different to what I've seen before, and variety is also a good thing, so I'm really excited about it.
Hey, Carlos, can I ask
yes.
Kieran a question?
Yes, sir.
Kieran, I mean, you've spent time at St. Andrews and the Scottish Links courses, King's Barnes and Turnberry and Muirfield. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, how from what you can see of Chambers Bay thus far, do you feel like it compares really favorably to those types of courses, or is it really something altogether different? What is your take on that?
Well, that's a good question, Fred. I think part of it does play into that. I think certainly the fair, because it's all fescue grass, which is a first for an American golf course. So in terms of fairways and greens, it is very links-like, particularly when it's so firm and fast. This play like Muirfield did 2 years ago or Horlake did 8 years ago, it feels that same way. But the one difference is between a conventional links course like St. Andrews, which is kind of where it all began. So say as an example, it's a very flat golf course. There is virtually no elevation change. At Chambers Bay, of course, there are massive elevation changes. So we have the ninth hole, for example, where one tee is 100 feet above the green and the other tee is 20 feet below it. And that's all in the golf course as well. So elevation changes aren't what you would commonly see at a links course in the UK. Although in saying that, a course like King's Barnes and Castle Street, which are the modern links courses that are essentially man-made links courses, I think the Chambers Bay is very similar to them, the way it's going to play. The one thing when I look at the golf course, particularly around the greens, and this is kind of a concern I do have about it, is to me it looks almost like an exaggerated caricature of a links course. The humps and hollows in the greens are very severe, more than you see in any traditional links course. So that is the one side it isn't quite that. But in terms of the way it will run in the fairway, the strategy for the players will be the same at St. Andrews as it will be at Chambers Bay. The fairways are relatively wide in both of those golf courses. Second shots are more about angles and the right shot into the green. So I think it's more like a links course in this country than we've ever seen in the US Open and probably ever will. And I say, in terms of the fairways and the running and the firmness of them, it will play very links-like. But the elevation changes is the one side that perhaps isn't what you see over here. However, it's certainly an intriguing test, that's for sure.
Fred, you know, the U.S. Open stays at a variety of courses. Most of the time it's set up in such a way that scoring is very difficult with a premium placed on accuracy and driving. You know, the U.S. Open is characterized by tight scoring at or around by par by the leaders, with the usually the winner emerging at the round at even par or close to it. And, you know, the U.S. seldomly a U.S. Open course is beaten thoroughly, and the history shows that really very good grind players and top-name players usually win here. How about the history on the U.S. Open, and what does really mean for the Pacific Northwest to finally have a major championship?
Well, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, Carlos, with your comments there. USGA does not like the tournament to be won way under par. Tiger tore up Pebble Beach several years ago, you know, and they really didn't like that much. But I mean, he was at the very peak of his ability at that point. So, and not too many players have ever been able to play at that kind of level. But yeah, historically, USGA courses are, you know, they finish right around par. You know, 3 or 4 under wins for sure. You know, even 1 or 2 under. And players like Elite Jansen, who shoot around par all the time, that's they shine when it comes to playing a U.S. Open venue. Well, this is going to be quite a bit different. But, and that's one of the questions I had down here for later in the show, actually, and we may want to discuss it, but, you know, what do we think the final score will be here? And quite honestly, I think the score is going to be at around par. Matter of fact, it wouldn't surprise me if the final score is 1 or 2 over for the week. Maybe somebody will get really hot and really get a feel for these greens and knock in some putts, maybe chip a few in or something. With 156 guys, you know, that can happen. But, you know, Martin Keimer was the class of the field last year at Pinehurst. And if you remember, that golf course was, you know, those greens played like a rock. You know, they wouldn't hold even a 9-iron shot. And they, you know, those bowl-like greens, those upside-down bowl-like greens, they would run off. And so it put a tremendous stress on the chipping and the short game of the players. And so that's exactly what I think is going to happen here with the dry conditions, how firm and how fast it is. I don't think many shots are going to end up on the greens. And if they do, you could see 3 and 4 putts real easy. So you may want to be off the green chipping uphill than on the other side of the green putting over 1 or 2 humps and bumps between you and the hole. So I think around par is going to get it done. And the player, as I mentioned earlier, the player that is mentally tough and will accept the bounce and just enjoy the next shot that they're hitting, that's the guy that's going to do well there. So as far as economic impact, Steve Mona, who we've had on the show a couple times from the World Golf Foundation, they're announcing that the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle-Tacoma area, is going to realize $140 million in economic impact for their area, you know, from lodging and food and refreshments and all the things that surround a tournament like that. So that's a big boost to that local economy with all those people coming in every day. You know, what are they going to have? 30,000 every day, something like that, coming into there. So that's a big deal for that whole Pacific Northwest area, Carlos.
And definitely it's the first for the Washington area. And, Kieran, I like that question from Fred about the score. We really have seen going all the way to Rory McIlroy 16-under. I don't think that's going to happen, but we've seen also very bad things like Angel Cabrera and Jeff Ogilvie to a 5-over. So, but recently, Martin Keimer last year, 9-under, he just went crazy. But 1-over had been before with Justin Rose and Webb Simpson. So what you think would be the score to win this year?
Well, I think Fred's absolutely right in the sense that anyone that finishes par is at very least going to make an awful lot of money this weekend, because you will not be far away. That may even be the winning score. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 1 or 2 over par, or even 3 or 4, in fact, but or even 2 or 3 under. I think in the end, this golf course, I think, will lend itself potentially to something like Martin Keimer to perhaps break free and separate the field. Some guys are going to come to this golf course and are going to really struggle. There's going to be many rounds in the 80s. Some guys are going to not get any handle on it at all and are just going to fall apart and you know, really disappear very quickly. Well, some guys, I think, who accept the challenge for what it is, like Fred says, and obviously on their game, have a really good short game week, your irons are really solid and putt well, those kind of guys, they could hang around the par number and maybe even get under that. And someone might go out and shoot maybe a 66 or a 67, but will they follow up a 73 or 74? That's always going to be the case. But of course, in the end, so much of this can be dictated by the USGA themselves and Mike Davis. You know, the pins here, as Fred has mentioned before, you know, the greens are so undulating in places. Look at the 18th green, for example. It's just incredible. and you can put the pin in an almost inaccessible place in the respect that any shot that's within 30 feet of the pin is going to be an unbelievable approach. There's not going to be many close, you know, approaches here this week, so lag putting is going to be a real priority and a real premium. So I certainly think level par, anyone around there is going to have a really good chance to win the championship. That may even be the winning score. But in the end, it's somewhat irrelevant in the winning score anyway. The guy with the lowest score is going to win as it is. And the USGA's obsession with par is somewhat strange anyway. For me, the guy, if it's 272, 275, that's the winning score. It doesn't matter. The best player will still win that week. But in the, again, it's the manner in which that's dictated. You look at Oakmont or Wingfoot, the scores there are so high because of how severe the rough is and how firm the greens are and how tight the fairways are. Here it's different. Here the challenge is more, it's wider off the tee, it's more about getting the ball in the right place in the fairway. It's not so much getting the ball straight, it's about being accurate and finding the right part of the fairway, getting the right bounce, getting the right roll and the right run, and then playing the right shot in, playing for the right, because you won't be landing the ball on the green here, you'll be running the ball onto most of the greens. But that being said, as I said earlier, there's so many elevation changes in the golf course. Your course management has to be real. Your caddy is going to be so important this week because you have to realize that on some shots, the ball's going to fly even further through the air because downhill or uphill going to play longer, and the bounce has to take into account the roll. So there's so many real. You know, it's a golf course that has to be learned, I think. I think that's why the players who have studied it more due diligently, those players will have a better chance of succeeding because the golf course does not give up its secrets easily. You have to learn it, you have to study it. Much like the old course at St Andrews, and Phil Mickelson's mentioned that and gave that comparison. The old course at St Andrews, when you first play the old course, and I played the old course a few times, you first play there, you think, where the hell am I supposed to hit the ball here? I mean, you can't even see half the fairways, you can't see the bunkers, the golf course is very unusual looking. But once you play it and you start to know it and understand it, you appreciate it more. And I think the players who have played more at Chambers Bay in the recent weeks and months, they will appreciate the golf course better than the guys who have just turned up this week. And those players, I think, will have been more likely to get around par and be more likely, therefore, to win the championship.
I'll be looking forward to see what Ian Poulter will say, but I'll save that for later.
But anyway. Carl, here's the thing, right? Ian Poulter has decided, before he's even went there, that he doesn't like the golf course. And that's a negative mindset already to have. And look at Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus has said, he said at the Memorial 2 weeks ago, and I think Fred was there, and Jack always said that when he was at a major championship venue, and other players and practice rounds complained about the golf course, they said, oh, the fairway's too tight, the greens are too firm, they're too fast, they're too bumpy. Jack loved hearing that because he felt that was a player that you could discount because the guy who doesn't like the golf course is mentally negative before it's even started, and that guy therefore will not have the mental capability to handle the pressure and the frustrations of playing a golf course that severe, so you can almost check that guy out of contention. So Ian Poulter and anyone who has a real negative mentality going into the tournament, you know, they are a real disadvantage. You have to embrace the challenge. It's the same for everybody else in the field. Whether you like it or not is irrelevant. As Jack said, you know, a golf course isn't supposed to suit your game. You've got to suit your game to a particular golf course, and that's what he was so good at, and that's why he won 18 majors. And anyone who wants to win at Chambers Bay will have to do that this week.
If I could add something here, Carlos, real quick, you know, that lends itself right to something that I try and teach every student that I work with for any length of time. Once they can get to hitting the ball and enjoying playing a little bit, then they expect to do that all the time, and they get mad when they hit a bad shot. And the true secret of golf, and I mean, you guys both play, so you know, but the true secret of golf, you know, they ask about Ben Hogan's secret. No, the true secret is that you have to enjoy the next shot. You hit it there. You have to enjoy the challenge, accept the challenge of doing what you want to do with the next shot. And this course, this style of play, completely lends itself to that. You know, I really believe that Bobby Jones, you know, he had a tremendous temper when he was younger. And he finally had to learn that the shot that he hit is over and done with. Now you have to embrace the next shot and enjoy the challenge of what you can do with it, using your ability to make that shot turn out to be something. And that's exactly what Martin Keimer did last year at Pinehurst that a lot of people couldn't understand. And that's exactly what we're going to see this week, guys.
You know, overall, I'm going to say yes, even par to me is going to be a score. But at the end of the day, the lowest score will win. If they go two or more tie, they'll go to a playoff, and the best of place that will win. I guarantee that. We'll say who is going to be a little bit later, but that's a guarantee from me. Lowest score
you
will win.
You guarantee it.
Yeah, I'll guarantee it. The lowest
Market.
Score
see,
will
Carlos,
win. Market
that's what they, whenever they ask, they all say to Arnold Palmer every year at the Masters, you know, Arnie, Mr. Palmer, who's going to win Augusta this year? And he always says, the guy with the lowest score. And it's so
yep,
true.
It's absolutely, absolutely. Those
Arnold
are
Palmer and Carlos Torres, same kind of thing. They're on the same way.
Two
wow.
Great minds,
oh, my
two geniuses.
Oh, my God. I'm going to cry. But anyway, it's time to start talking about the players now, okay? And I have to mention that 11 players that are qualified for this U.S. Open also played in the U.S. Amateur in 2010. Topping that list is Jordan Spieth, who failed to make it to the match play portion. Peter Uihlein was the winner. He was the top player there in the U.S. In the Amateur. Also, you know, Patrick Reed fell in the second round of match play. Ben Ann advanced the furthest of the 11, reaching the semifinals. And so what can we expect from the players? I know that I would say I have to expect somebody to win, to have some sort of linked forms. It's an absolute must. You know, if you never perform a coastal track, this one will be very difficult to suddenly come and win against the very best. It definitely tee to green proficiency and understanding of when to attack and when to defend, you know, and obviously putting, although they say may not be that big of a thing, ultimately is the difference at the majors, and definitely some sort of recent form. I think we can feel pretty confident that you can discount pretty much anyone who hasn't been playing well in recent outings. So, sorry, Tiger, you know, even Lucas Glover had a T-second a few weeks before his victory in 09. So, Fred, I'm going to let you go first. Who are your top young picks, your veterans, your international, and your pick to win?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough for me to pare this down, guys. I always like to pick about 10 people, so.
There are only 156 available, so
I know,
don't go over
there. But I was going to say, you know what, I really have not had a lot of problem picking guys this week, and so I'm going to stick to this. I've put this out a couple times already, so my favorites. My top favorites are Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, and Adam Scott. Now, breaking those down, okay, Jordan Spieth, he's my young guy, and I give him just a slight edge over Ricky, but, you know, Ricky could win this week. I really like him a lot. Between those two guys, Justin Rose and probably Adam Scott and maybe Rory a little bit, but those guys are my top guys right there. For my veteran, I'm gonna go outside the box. I want to say Zach Johnson a little bit, just because his phenomenal chipping ability. Zach Johnson, you remember the guy that chipped in a couple times on Tiger, and he makes a career out of chipping in. So, and I'm telling you what I'm gonna do here, and I never picked this guy, okay? But I'm gonna make you guys happy, give you something to shout about. I'm picking Zach Johnson, but I'm just giving Zach a slight edge over Phil Mickelson, because, you know, Phil has a pretty good short game. So, you know, he might be there at the end. My European guy, I got to go with Justin Rose. Justin's playing as well as anybody in the world right now. I think he's probably ranked like seventh or eighth, somewhere down in there, but he's really the second or third best guy in the world right now. He's coming off a second in the Masters, a win in New Orleans, and a loss and a runner-up at the Memorial, so he's really playing well. I really want to pick Luke Donald, but he just hasn't been doing anything, except he's been playing just a little bit better of late, and he did qualify. He was the medalist at the Columbus Sectional, so you know, maybe there's hope. Maybe Luke Donald's going to get back in, and he's got a pretty fair short game himself. And my international guy, I'm going to go with Adam Scott, but it's just, again, the slightest of edge over Jason Day. I mean, they're like 1 and 1A. And my wild card, I'm going to slip Rory in there because that was a spot for him. Because the young guys, I could, that way I could get Jordan and Ricky in there, and I still could talk about Rory. So there you have it. You guys can take a shot at it. I know I'm picking all the top guys, but that's what I think is going to happen.
Wow, that's surprising. I mean, I can say just Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Jim Furyk, top three, and that's it. So that was easy, Kieran. Give me something. Give me something. Come on. The fans are waiting for your comments about it.
Well, you know, thankfully Fred hasn't picked everyone I was going to pick, so that's a first. Usually he gets in first and picks everyone, all the obvious favourites. But I've got a few different kind of outside guys. But for my young guy, kind of breaking us down the category, my young guy, I'm going to go for Ricky Fowler for a simple reason in that he loves the challenge of links golf and links-style golf. He's shown that in the Open Championship in the past at St. Andrews, at Royal St. George's, and, of course, at Royal Liverpool last year. He embraces the challenge. He's a shot maker. And when he gets going, he's a good putter. And, of course, he has a winning mentality now. He won the Players' Championship, which, of course, is really, it's up there with the major championships. It's arguably the strongest field of the year. And he won that with perhaps the best 2 hours of golf I've ever seen. It was incredible the way he played that finishing stretch at Sawgrass that week. So Ricky Fowler's my young guy to potentially become US Open champion, go on better than he did last year. Looking at the older guys, well, you know what? I'm going to go one step further than Fred did, and I'm going to say that this week, and this man is going to win this week, is Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson's finally going to exorcise the demons of Wingfoot and Marion and Shinnecock Hills and Pinehurst and finally win his national championship and complete the Grand Slam at the age of 45. Because, you know, he's been the most positive person about the golf course. He's playing tremendously. He's playing very well, actually. And people forget this, that Phil, he ran close at the Masters. He played well at the PGA last year. He played well last week. He played well a few weeks before that as well. So he's in reasonably good form. He's feeling good. He feels good at the golf course. He has a very sound strategy how to play the golf course. He's confident about that. And, of course, he's shown in the last few years that he can play that style of golf, winning the Scottish Open at Castle Stewart, winning the Open Championship at Muirfield. And I think, Phil, this maybe not his last chance, but I think it's possibly his best last chance to win the US Open. And if you believe in omens and that sort of thing, you look at it this way. And today Phil turned 45 years old, and he made his debut in the US Open 25 years ago at Medina in 1990. And who won that week? 45-year-old Hale Irwin. So the stars are aligning for Phil. And I think this could perhaps be finally his week. It would be a tremendous story to see someone complete the Grand Slam, particularly after they won the first major at the age of 34. To actually do that in that period of time would be tremendous, given that Gary Player, Tiger, and Jack Nicklaus all completed the Grand Slam before they even turned 30. So Phil's my pick to win. He's my old guy to win. My international player, well, you know, I've somewhat struggled to pick an international player, oddly enough. I thought about Justin Rose, but I'm not sure about that. And Rory, has Rory got is it really suit him this style of golf? I'm not so sure either. But of course, his distance off the tee, he plays well. He's also got a good chance to win. So I'm not sure if an international guy. I might go with Hideki Matsuyama, who I think is someone who quietly goes about his business, and he's played well in the majors before, and he's a fantastic ball striker, one of the very best in the game. Has he got the putting touch to actually win the tournament? I'm not sure about that, but certainly, I think he has the potential to be in the top 10 at worst. My kind of wild card pick is an American player who hasn't been talked about at all, really, and that is Brant Snedeker, who has gone under the radar in recent weeks, and he played well at the Byron Nelson, played well at Colonial. He's got a fantastic short game, is a great putter. He's played well in links-style courses before. He's played well in the majors before as well. Of course, almost won the Masters. He almost won the Open Championship a couple of years ago at Livingston Hand as well. So, and even at Muirfield. So I think Snedeker is someone who could be a bit of a wild card. But as I say, it's good. The guy who wins is the person who embraces the challenge, obviously plays well, has a bit of luck at times, of course. But and I think the man who's going to finally exorcise demons and win the US Open is going to be Phil Mickelson. But I've quickly remembered who my international guy was. and that was Henrik Stenson. So there you go. One of those guys is going to win.
Yeah, you know, this is the last time I'm gonna let you guys go first. It has happened.
We haven't picked Sergio. We left you Sergio. We kind of left you Hideki.
I deliberately left you Sergio, Carlos. Come on.
This is definitely.
Carlos, we even left you Colin Montgomery. We left you Sergio and Monte, so you get plenty of guys
exactly.
to pick from.
Exactly.
Even Lee Jansen, he's playing. You can pick him if you want.
Yeah, I can pick Monte, you know, or Sergio, but none of them were in my list. And all the guys that I was going to pick, again, I don't have anything to say now. What can I say?
I'm going to start by saying that
I'm really upset because I said they are never, ever going to pick Phil Mickelson to win. Never. Never. They're not even going to mention him. That's my pick to win. How could you two guys go to Phil Mickelson? No way. Don't do
that. It never happened.
Phil's going to win.
I mean, when I was referring, this is incredible. Because I was saying, I don't know if you remember, I started by saying someone who has links for him, who knows about it, you know, San Andres, making that you know, T to green proficiency. I was hinting at it, you know, and that's a great short game. But you guys just nailed it, just took it out from me. So my pick to win is Mickelson. I mean, and my second pick, now that one, no one of you mentioned him, and that's Jim Furyk. I think the veteran, he's playing great. That win that he had recently took out that monkey off his back of all those near misses, and he's just playing well. I mean, nobody's mentioning the number three player in the world, Jim Furyk. He has the kind of game to win here. And definitely has played well in the U.S. Open before. And my international and young player has to be who else? Hideki Matsuyama. He's one of the best ball strikers on tour, and this course will reward that aspect of his game. You know, he has been one of the very best players on tour, and if he has a bad week, it will be down to his putting, which should not matter so much here. This tournament will come down to who can grit out the longest, and Matsuyama could just feature there. You know, he's shown that he can mix it up at the very top level and could well become the first Japanese player to win a major. On the European side, yes, I also like Justin Rose. You know, he checks off a ton of boxes. If you look for a pick in Chambers Bay, I know he's got the form type of creativity needed to make those shots and the mental toughness as well. So he's definitely the top European that I would pick. And also, I like really also Mr. Fowler this week. He definitely has played. He has showed that he can play well at Seaside and golf venues. So he's one. And, hey, my sleeper to watch is, and no one has mentioned him, is Francesco Molinari. He has top five finishes in three of the last four tournaments he has played, and he leads the tour in fairways hits, and he's top five in greens in regulation. So he's another one whose putting woes should not be as much as an issue this week. So those are my picks. So any final parting words before we close the show? We have 3 minutes to go.
I do have a couple things. We failed to mention that Michael Putnam made the field, and he grew up there. And his brother, who caddies for him, was actually a caddy at the course at Chambers Bay for some time. So Putnam has maybe played it more than anybody else at this point. You know, of course, we've talked about Jordan Spieth's caddy, Mike Grillo, is from the area also. But what's really important here, guys, that we've overlooked and we failed to mention tonight is one thing that – Adam Scott, my guy who from Chambers Bay has been emailing me and telling me that Adam Scott, as of Sunday, had played there 6 days in a row with local caddies and working with people. And you also know, you know, he's got Stevie on the bag out of retirement. So Adam Scott's got to be a serious contender here, guys.
Any final words, Kieran? We have a minute and a half to go.
I'll only just say I'm looking forward to the U.S. Open this year because I think we're going to see the players tested in different ways than we normally see. Skills are going to be required that they aren't normally needed to use. You know, the mental skills and also the ability to have imagination and creativity, not just around the greens, but with their approaches, to pick the right spot, to run the ball, to get the right bounce and the right roll. It's going to be a real test of execution, but also of the strategic mind and the mental prowess to cope with the odd bad bounce and the odd bad result. And so it's going to be a real fascinating watch all weekend to see who is best equipped to deal with that. And it's going to be the person who wins on Sunday is going to be the guy, or even on Monday in a playoff, is going to be the guy who not only played unbelievably well, but also kept his mind in check, and that's going to be a real test. And again, that's what the USGA want to do. They want to test every facet of the players' games, and that's certainly going to be the case this week at Chambers Bay.
You just described Phil Mickelson winning and completing the career Grand Slam. So,
Phil Mickelson will be a U.S. Open champion.
Phil Mickelson, he will complete the career Grand Slam. Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, Lydia Ko. Good luck to her on the future. She's a great player to watch. We can't wait to see what she has in store for us. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Alongside Kieran Clark and Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.